America behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
I am Ben Bolin, caffeine enthusiast and video writer for the same website.
I didn't know we could do that. I'm also a caffeine enthusiast.
You are. I see you, you know.
I know.
See you hanging on to those Coke Zeros.
I'm there way too often getting those. Way too often.
I feel like it's cool. It's kind of like your thing, man.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah.
I always try to, whenever I walk into the break room, always try to keep some stocked, you know?
You know what else is my thing?
What's that?
Talking about everything about cars.
Yes.
Everything. And I mean everything. So we've got another episode that we got some good response to last time.
Mm-hmm.
We called it Nuts and Bolts because we didn't really know what else to call it because it's, what, a little bit of everything?
Yeah, and that's true. And we actually, I think we kind of overestimated ourselves because when we finished our first Nuts and Bolts episode, we still had so much stuff, mm-hmm. both of us. And so much so that coupled with the audience response, we decided to do a Nuts and Bolts 2.
And here we are.
And here we are, my friend.
Number three.
We are the trilogy, Mr. B.
Nuts and Bolts number three. And you know what? I'm going to venture to say that we're going to probably have more of these because, I don't know, it's just a good place to kind of put that stuff that doesn't fit.
Yeah. Cause we get a lot of mail and we have a lot of topics or questions that we think aren't quite by themselves enough to do a 20-minute show or a 15-minute show or something. Mm-hmm. So we...
But definitely worthy of a mention.
Definitely.
Definitely. Especially some of this listener mail. I got a stack. Look at the stack of listener mail. Huge stack.
Yeah.
You measure it by inches, the stack of listener mail that I have in front of me here. But where do you want to start? You want to hit it or do you want me to go with some stuff here? Because I got a lot of...
Let's see. I'll go with something. I'll go with something to set us off a bit. All right, Scott. Eric writes in from Toronto, Ontario, which he also helpfully mentions is in Canada, and he had just heard our podcast on international driver's licenses, and he said that when he was on a trip to Ottawa in eighth grade, our tour guide told us to watch out for cars with red license plates, or tomatoes, as they were called by us, the kids, because that meant it was from an ambassador from another country. The license plate meant they don't have to abide by our laws. They can park anywhere as long as they abide the laws of their own country, obey the laws of their own country.
Okay.
So he was told that once an ambassador had been driving while drunk and killed a pedestrian. However, the laws of his or her country didn't forbid drunk driving, so they weren't supposed to prosecute him or her.
Right.
Obviously, though, it wasn't right to simply let this pass, so our government threatened to close that country's embassy if they didn't let the ambassador go on trial, says Eric. Of course, they didn't want their embassy closed, so they tried and sentenced him, or her, and let the embassy remain open. I thought that related a lot to your UN plate thing, so how you don't have to pay any fines if you have it, though as you can see by this example, you shouldn't go too crazy with it. Now listen, we have a lot of ambassadors listening to our show.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure. That was a sarcastic right, by the way, in the middle of that. Because, come on, you kill a pedestrian with a car, you're not going to be, sentenced for something like that?
Right. That's ridiculous to think that there should not be consequences.
No. You can't just drive like it's a demolition derby out on the street and think everything's fine.
Yeah.
There's no way. I mean, parking? Okay. Maybe.
Illegal parking, speeding.
I guess I get that, sort of. Not really, but I mean, we'll just go with it.
Yeah, it's still, I'm glad that this is the second email we've received where someone is telling us, you know, technically there are people with diplomatic immunity, but mm-hmm. in practice, it doesn't extend that far.
Because that's one of the things you wanted, right? It was diplomatic immunity.
Absolutely.
Plates, of course.
Absolutely.
A good plan.
I won't kill anybody.
Hey,
Scott.
I got a couple of stuff here. I got a couple of things here, a couple of prints. Let me do this one second. This one is, I'm just going to go through these rapid fire, okay?
Rapid fire. Boom,
just a
boom,
few
boom.
Here and then we'll get to some stuff later. Luke from New Mexico writes in regards to our urban car legend story.
Oh, I love these emails.
Okay, here we go. My roommate told me this story last semester. Apparently it happened to an ex-girlfriend of his.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I have no reason to believe that it is untrue. And this is a, I'm going to just paraphrase this, okay?
All right.
Group of teens go to a concert in Iowa. They come back out. There's an old woman sitting in the back of the car asking for a ride home. Okay. In
creepy.
The stadium lot, whatever.
Creepy.
It is creepy. Now she insists that she's just lives around the corner, can't make it home on her own. Would they just give her a ride home? And they said, no, we're not going to do that. Right. Over and over again. Finally, they contact security. Security called the police, and they drag her, quote, kicking and yelling out of the car. When they pulled her out, they saw that she was sitting on a hatchet, and that apparently this was a male that had been recently escaped from prison just 2 days earlier, and is waiting for the girls to get in a car. And then when they, you know, were going to drive him home, mm-hmm. who knows what would have happened now. Now Luke says, you know, he heard this from a friend of a friend, mm-hmm. and it's a person sitting in the back of the car that was sitting on a hatchet that was not who, he or she said that they were.
Mm-hmm.
This has every marking of a urban legend to me.
At least a retelling
of an urban legend to me. So Luke, I'm sorry. I think it's an urban legend. I don't think, it's just one of those things that, you know, a friend of a friend tells you that's, it's always, really not traceable, and it seems to have all the elements of this.
Yeah. It's just, you know what I like about that one, though? It's just within the realm of possibility.
It is.
It's not a guy with a hook on his hand.
And no doubt a spooky story. I mean, if you read the whole thing, I'd paraphrase it, so it's not, you know, quite as scary. It won't keep you awake at night.
Yeah, I don't really sleep.
Or maybe it will, yeah. All right, let's move on here.
Let's move on.
Turi, T-U-R-I.
Mm-hmm.
Says, oh, listen to this. Listening to your Nuts and Bolts episode, hearing you list off some podcast ideas, and this can't get this idea out of my head. Driver's education and or driver's tests around the world. Some places hardly have any requirements, while others require all sorts of stuff.
That's true.
So maybe something about driver's ed.
Get out of my head, Tori. We're working on that one.
Yeah, because that's a good one, because I had a pretty intense driver's ed class.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, very intense. It was over the summertime. Mm-hmm. You had to be there at like 6 in the morning or 6:30 in the morning, and it lasted until something like 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
That is kind of hardcore.
Coursework, a lot of driving.
Did you have to get one of those cars that has two steering wheels?
No.
And two sets of...
Never had that. It did have two sets of pedals, though.
It has, yeah.
Well, it had the brake pedal.
Just
the brake pedal, yeah, but no two steering wheels. You just reached over if you had to.
That's a great idea.
Okay. Here's another one from Peter, and Peter is commenting on the blog, actually.
Peter on the blog.
On the blog. He says he has two suggestions for episodes, Fuel Economy from the 1930s until now.
Nice one.
The creators of iconic muscle cars like the Mustang, the Camaro, the Challenger, things like mm-hmm, that. Mm-hmm. So that's a good one. Okay, Ben and Scott, this one's from Alan from Riverside, California.
Oh, at first I thought you were like, this is from two people named Ben and Scott.
No.
Okay, so Alan from Riverside.
Alan from Riverside says, you guys should do a podcast on what device one can put in the car vehicle in the summer that will cool the vehicle rather than getting into a hot vehicle and waiting for it to cool down. I don't know if he's saying that he already knows about this or not, but there's good news. There is something that already does this.
Can we get some good news music?
Good news music, yeah.
Okay.
I heard that... I know he's not talking about the foil thing that you put up in the windshield, right? What he's talking about here is there's a fan that you can install in a cracked window. You know, you just lower it just a crack.
Yeah.
It's a vent that draws in air from the outside, which is cooler than the air on the inside.
Definitely.
And it's a fan that circulates air within the car. It's an electric fan. Operates off of your either battery power or off of your cigarette lighter.
Okay.
Reserve power, that type of thing. You know, much like a cell phone charger or something.
Sure.
So good news. There is some kind of electric fan device. You have to search for it online to find out who makes them. But
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's an aftermarket thing. It's real simple. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just a matter of rolling your window down an inch and then putting this thing in and then rolling it back up to where it's tight.
I wonder how much power it takes.
So. I don't know. Probably not much. It can't be that much, but I bet you there's a limit to how long you can let that thing run before it does drain your battery.
Oh, yeah.
I would think it'd be, you know, I'm guessing like a half an hour, an hour, something like
that.
Yeah,
don't leave it on overnight.
No, not a good idea.
Hey, I've got someone who's got a little correction for us.
Oh, good.
Because I think we should establish early on that we are not adverse to corrections.
No, I'm not afraid of that.
So CJ writes in to say, hey, guys, in your tractor pull episode, you talked about how there are no 1,000 horsepower street legal production cars. This isn't correct. The Bugatti Veyron has 1,001 horsepower, while the Veyron SS has 1,200 horsepower, and there are surely more cars like this that I forgot. Note they are not made in extremely large numbers, but they are production cars.
Very good point.
So, CJ...
Did I say no production cars?
I didn't listen to it. I'm sure that if it was an error, it was probably mine.
No, I don't. That's fine.
But, I mean, he does make a good point. They are boutique cars, but they are production
Correct.
Cars.
Correct. And you know what? I got something that dovetails exactly with this.
Nice.
The Bugatti Veyron Supersport. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have a new world's fastest car, Ben. This is an update, and this comes from a listener. Matt. Uh-huh. I'm not sure where Matt's from.
From the internet.
Yeah. He's from the internet, apparently. There is a Bugatti Veyron SS that's available now, and the thing has 1,200 horsepower. It's still the 16-cylinder engine, 1,100-plus pound-feet of torque. So they're talking about a super – well, you know, above whatever it had before, I think 1,001 or something like that. Still quite a bit. It has recently – I mean, this is official – recently averaged 267 miles per hour. Is the top speed. Now, if you recall, the SSC Ultimate Aero had that record, mm-hmm. which was 256 in 2007.
Yeah.
And,
the Bloodhound, right?
Yeah, this is, no. This is the SSC Ultimate Aero.
I'm back. I'm with you.
Not the Salt Flat car.
Yeah.
We're talking about,
That's
what you were thinking of.
Yeah, it was.
It's way fast. It's like four times as fast.
That's why I was giving pause.
The average speed of 267, this was done, I believe it was in July of this year. And just to get your head wrapped around this, now this is two runs in opposite directions on that track that you've probably seen the Top Gear guys that did the top speed run in this thing. Same track, okay? With that long, long stretch. That equates to about 4.5 miles per minute in this car if you're at top speed. Or you're traveling about 400 feet per second.
400 feet per second?
400 feet per second. Now, to put that in a little bit more perspective, mm-hmm. you're beyond the speed of a Formula One car. You're beyond the speed of Indy cars, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we talk about the incredible forces that are acting on those guys, well, they have to turn at that type of speed. But remember we talked about how much they miss when they blink, like 37 feet or something?
37 feet, yeah.
That would be even extended in this case. It would be further than mm-hmm. 37. It'd be more like, you know, 45 or whatever. I don't know what the distance would be. But again, 400 feet per second. An Indy car is traveling, I think, a football field every second. So that's only about 300 feet. This is going 25% farther. Crazy speed.
Fastest street legal.
It is a production car for this year. They're going to build it in the fall of this year. And the first five are said to be exact replicas of the one that set the record. Mm-hmm. The remainder of the production is going to be electronically limited to a top speed of 257.8, and that's to protect the tires.
Oh, they got a governor switch?
To protect the tires.
Basically.
Well, yeah, it's a second. Yeah, exactly. It's electronically limited.
Yeah, but how are they going to, seriously, protecting the tires? I just want to say that those tires are doomed from the jump.
You're exactly right. And they only last at top speed. They're supposed to, they have a lifespan of minutes at top speed.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It really, like 15 minutes at top speed, I think. But then if you realize that the fuel runs out prior to the tires wearing out.
Oh, yeah.
Because it sucks so much fuel. And so, mm-hmm. I mean, air doesn't really have much to do with it, but air, it takes a tremendous amount of air.
I'm sure, yeah, the intake is
crazy. Fuel is just huge. All right, one quick thing that kind of mixes with that.
Yes.
Well, it's all Bugatti related here. Take a look at this little car here. I'm going to show you a picture.
Is that gold?
That's gold. That's a gold Bugatti Veyron.
Is that car made of gold or covered in gold?
The car is made of gold.
That is, really?
Solid gold.
People are starving in this world.
Now, this is a – it weighs 7 kilograms. It's made out of 24-karat gold and platinum. With the front end, you know, like in the horseshoe emblem for the Bugatti, 7.2 carats of diamonds.
Took
2 months to build this thing. This is a 1/18th scale model, so
I don't feel as bad.
No, not a full car. 1/18th scale. Yeah. Guess the cost.
Now
keep in mind the Bugatti itself.
Yeah.
Is about a $2 million car.
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
And this is 1/18th scale.
1/18th scale. And it's made of gold, but, you know, so it's a desktop item.
Well, luckily for me and the rest of our listeners, we have all listened to the scale model episode. We've listened to some stuff about the Bugattis before.
So is this really going to help you?
No. Okay. I'm going to say 1.3 million.
Okay. You're way off.
How way off am I?
the real car itself, you know, the full model that you can get in and drive.
Two something.
Two right? million. I think the convertible is 2.2 million.
Okay.
This scale model, gold and platinum and diamonds.
Oh, the diamonds. Crap, that threw me off.
$2.9 million. $2.9 million.
That is wrong.
Yeah.
That is just wrong.
Yeah.
Who owns that?
It's made in Munich.
Who buys those?
It's a jeweler that's made this. It's a limited edition Bugatti Veyron Diamond is what it's called.
Okay.
Labor of love. Stuart Hughes and Robert Gulpin of Munich have made this vehicle. So you might want to check that out online.
Did a listener send us that or did you
find that? No, I just found that.
Okay.
Digging around.
I've got one. So Danny writes in from the internet, and he says, "Hey guys, thanks for all the great work. My drive to work's about 30 minutes, so that is when I listen to the show. I often think of things I'd like to tell you about, but by the time I get home, they slip my 57-year-old mind. One thing I was going to mention is that there's an unusual race event held here annually in the Lock Cave in Pennsylvania area. The Susquehanna River runs through town. A couple years ago, there was an annual cardboard boat race instituted. So it sounds like Denning is kind of responding to our unusual races episode.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave us a link to this cardboard boat race, which I did check out and which looks hilarious.
Cardboard boats.
Yeah, I think I would participate in this pretty well. And he said also, this is his like nuts and bolts email to us of stuff he remembered.
Okay.
On another topic, one of our local used car dealers published a book several years ago called Vintage Car Crashes. It's a collection of photos he took for years. It's all car pics and no victims, blood or gore. And I think you guys might appreciate it. And so, yeah.
You know what? I would love that.
I would love to see that too.
Yeah.
And then the last thing you want to tell us about, Denny says he's building a garage at his home, so when he retires, he'll have a place to tinker. He'll actually be disassembling a 100-year-old carriage house located about 40 miles from his house and reassembling it back here with some improvements. Perhaps an episode on garage accessories or cool garage stuff.
Now I remember this one. That was such a cool letter because I'm intrigued by places. You usually see this in pubs, right? Someone will relocate a pub from Ireland to the United States or to England or wherever they want to take it. But you'll hear about them packing these things up, you know, brick by brick, reassembling them wherever they want to put them exactly the way they came from Ireland or from wherever they came from. He's doing this with a garage.
And a couple of robber barons have done the same thing with castles in this country.
Wow.
We should do – this is something I've wanted to do for a while, to do an episode about how moving those kind of things works.
Yeah.
You know, how do you move things that are not supposed to be moved?
Well, that'd be great. That's a fantastic idea. So, yeah, Denny, thanks a lot. That's a good one. And good luck with that project, by the way. That's really cool.
Yeah, check back in with us. I'd love to see how that turns out.
I love everything about that idea. That's really cool. That's a neat project, and I'd like to see some photos if he's got them.
Man.
Maybe even, you know, the carriage house on its original property and then on his property as well. See how it looks. You know, the updates as well.
I gotta say, man, I gotta call you out just a little bit. Ever since you started on this project car, like more and more seriously going toward it, you've been into the project emails.
I know, and the garage stuff and all that stuff. You know, I've been, you want to mention that right now?
Yeah, let's mention that.
Might as well.
Yeah.
I guess a while back I mentioned I was going to get a project car, right?
Mm-hmm. You were thinking about it the last time we talked about it.
Yeah, well, I'm actively searching right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going out to meet with people and calling and, you know, doing everything that I need to do, all the research. And so far, not so good.
Well, yeah, from what you tell me.
It takes time. It takes time.
Well, would you rather do it quickly with a car that you're settling for? Or would you rather have fun with it and do it the right way?
Yeah.
You
know? Well, I'm finding a bunch in all categories, but there's always something that happens with them that, you know, takes it out of the running. Either it's sold just ahead of me, which I find that happens often. I've had about three or four attempts now.
Yeah.
One that I'll just call, it was a grand idea that never happened, really. But the one I was probably the most serious about. I've had Midgets, Triumph TR3 that I was thinking about buying that was unfortunately sold when I called.
Ouch!
Yeah, I know, and it was good. It was really good. The one that I won't really count is there was a Ferrari that was for sale that is expensive. Now, I mean, you laugh, but it was a quick. It was an easy, quick $10,000, possibility for profit. I saw it mark way under what it should have been.
You could have flipped it, you're
saying. I could have flipped it quickly, for about $10,000 extra dollars. And it wasn't a, you know, super high $200,000 car you're talking about. It's still expensive, and that's what held me back. It was like in the 50 range.
Mm-hmm.
And good luck getting a car loan for $50,000 on your third car. It's not going to happen for me.
Nice.
No, so anyways, not that one. But the most promising vehicle that I've seen so far was a Type 35 Bugatti replica that I was terribly interested in.
And you showed me pictures.
Yeah, I've got it right here
somewhere. It's a sweet car.
It's a neat car. Yeah, it really is cool.
It needs some work.
It does need some work. And it turns out, you know, when you get there, it needs more work than you think. It's all rotted out.
Yeah, but that's you're lucky in that respect, because the whole point of having a project car, right?
Yeah, you get it. You get it cheap and you fix it up and then you can sell it and make a little bit of money on it. And that was the whole point. You know, the reason that I was able to afford it, it was because of the condition it was in. If it was in better condition, it would be worth more and it would have been out of my range. But everything was going fairly well with this thing. I went and met the guy. You know, it was under just kind of a carport, I guess, but it was, you know, covered with leaves and had a good engine. He had worked on the chassis himself. It was a custom rectangular tube frame chassis that he built. Spent a lot of time with it, but like, you know, the wood on the dash was all rotted out and it was gel coat that had never been painted.
Ouch.
You know, the photo is an old photo that looked really good. The current condition is not so good. He's made some adjustments to it since then and, you know, just didn't look so great, but needed a lot of work, a little bit of welding. The main thing that held me back from this car was the title. And when we started talking about, you know, the actual purchase of the car, it came down to this real weird thing where he wanted me to contact the owner of the title, which he had in his hand. I could see the title, but it was titled to a woman in North Carolina. And then it had been sold to a guy that lived down the street from him, an older guy, who then sold it to somebody else, and then he bought it. And then I said, well, what about licensing? And he said, no, I just put my
old license plate.
He said, I put my truck license plate on it, and I drove it for 3 years like that. You don't have to worry about that. And I said, no, I can't do that. I got to register it. I got to get it, you know, make it legal.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, for the title, you know, you can contact this guy, but I think he's a little bit out of his mind now at this point, and you don't want to talk to him. And I said, oh, my gosh, what's going on with this title? And it's like it's not even – he doesn't even really have the title himself signed over to him.
Yeah.
So I said, I don't know about this whole deal. And he's like, you can do a title search. And he's like, or – and he leaned back in his chair, and he kind of looked at me and smiled over the title and said, we could try to erase this right here.
Illegal.
Yes, exactly. So I'm not going to erase anything off of a title. No matter how badly I want this car, I'm not going to erase anything on a title.
I like how he phrased it so that it would still be your fault
if
you got caught.
Yeah.
What a helpful individual.
I know. It was trouble from the beginning. I should have noticed, but I'm still looking and actively looking. It's going to happen, but hasn't yet.
Hey, no negativity, man. It's going to be okay.
I know.
It's going to be okay.
Well, I'm kind of like leaning – well – my wife has also decided that a small car might not be the one for me. I might need a bigger car. So, this is a safety issue, right? And I love small cars, right?
Yeah, they've got that zip you like.
The smaller, the better, right? I like to be able to touch the ground when I reach out of the window, okay? She wants me on something gigantic, like an old pickup truck, which I'm totally cool with. I'm good with that. Or a great big old hot rod of some kind. Mm. But I really do like small cars a lot, and that's kind of what I'm going for here. So, we'll see how this turns out. But, you know, good paint job on a car, on an old truck, a little bit of engine work and some new wood in the bed.
Huge difference.
Might work out fine. Yeah, so I'm thinking that's maybe the way to go.
Stay positive.
Yeah.
Hey, Denny liked us on Facebook. He put that in a PS. So
very good.
So things are looking up.
Very good.
It's gotten good. What do you have? Actually, can I ask you? I've got a question to ask you from a listener.
Please
I wanted
do.
To kick this around.
Yeah.
Okay, so Tony writes in from Idaho, and he says, Ben and Scott, I drive a Z06 Nissan Titan, which I love. One thing I don't love is the fuel economy. I drive it pretty conservatively because it uses so much fuel. You guys have done several podcasts that deal with fuel economy, and so my question to you is, does aftermarket air intake, like a K&N intake system, for instance, increase fuel economy? Because there seems to be some debate about it, and if not, what can I do to increase the fuel economy of, get this, Scott, this pig of a vehicle?
Oh, boy.
Tony seems a little bit anti...
Is it Titan?
It's a Titan.
Okay, so it's a great big boxy vehicle, right?
It's got, I would want to increase the fuel economy too.
Sure, of course. Yeah, now,
so does an aftermarket air intake increase?
They claim that it does, yeah. Because it's less restrictive and it allows more fuel to be, well, you know what, it allows more fuel to be burned, but you'll find that you'll use less, if you drive it conservatively, you'll find that you don't have to apply the gas pedal quite as hard to make it go just as fast and far. Mm-hmm. If that makes any sense. You realize that the car is more responsive, so you don't have to push the gas pedal quite as hard to get, you know, what you're expecting out of it. But the problem that I had with this is, you know, when they do claim mileage increases, they claim horsepower increases, so you get power and mileage out of something like that. And by freeing up, I know that in Hondas it's huge. I know that, you know, the more air you can cram in the engine, the better, and the more you, and the faster you can get it out of the engine.
Yeah, aftermarkets are huge.
That's why you hear Hondas with lots of big exhausts and, and intakes and things like that. It's a huge aftermarket. And they do run very efficiently when you run them like that. Now, I don't know about the Titan specifically, but I know that, you know, the makers of these aftermarket intakes will claim, that, yeah, your fuel economy will go up if you add their part.
I want to point out here that One thing that you touched on that we should really mention, to Tony, if you listen to our Hypermiling podcast, one of the big points we make there is, the way you drive has a huge impact.
Yeah.
So if you get the, you mentioned a K&N intake system, if you have that on there, it will increase. I believe their claims are legitimate. But I think that, like any other company, they're tested under ideal conditions in the way that make them look the best.
It may be a lab condition, even.
Right.
It may not be a real world condition. I can't speak for every manufacturer of intakes because there are a ton of them now. But I know that some of them test in labs and some test in the real world. And
some use a combination.
Exactly, so. Yeah. So just investigate it, do your homework on it. And, you know, one of the big things that we talked about was weight also in the car.
Yeah, weight to power ratio.
And that's a big factor in efficiency is weight. If you're carrying around a toolbox in the back, if you're carrying around a lot of stuff that you don't need to. Also the aerodynamics of the thing, of course, you know, nothing much you can do about that really. A few things here and there, but not much. Driving style is the best thing that you can, cause when I had cars with intakes before, and the problem I found was that, you know, you get that added response and a little bit extra horsepower, and I found myself going everywhere full throttle.
You're a speed demon, though.
I know. Well,
Tony,
I think a lot of people
might not be a speed demon.
Yeah, I guess not, but I think a lot of people do that. I mean, this is something that could potentially save you fuel. I found that I used more because I was really gunning it the whole time.
That's a good point. Because it is an opportunity to really decrease your fuel economy.
Yeah, it is. It is. It really. I mean, so, it depends on how you drive it.
Yeah. So really, Tony, it just goes down to how you drive, man. I'm sorry we don't have exactly a silver bullet for you on that one. But if you do hypermiling techniques and you do have an air intake system like aftermarket inside there, then you probably will see an increase in your fuel economy. But if you use the power that the aftermarket system gives you to just burn rubber, then you are going to see a sharp drop in your fuel economy.
Yeah, you'll see a steady decrease.
Yeah.
Who's next? I got a bunch of, you know what? I'm going to save, I got some stuff that I've seen recently, but I'm going to save it.
We should maybe, like, I feel like we're already getting to where we need to do number four. Because I'm remembering some other listener mail that I didn't bring with me.
Some number four.
Like a number four nuts and bolts.
Gotcha. I understand what you're saying.
Should we change the name of number four, though? Because it's starting to get like horror movies.
No, I don't. Maybe. You know what? Maybe we'll switch it up. We'll see for the number four. So look for that. There may be a new title.
Bolts and Nuts?
You know, great idea.
Yeah.
Great idea, yeah. You really switched it up on us there.
I'm nothing if not original.
He's an idea guy.
All right. What's going on?
I got so much stuff here. I'm gonna, you know what? I'm gonna mention one though. I'm gonna mention one stuff that I've, one thing that I've seen recently.
Can we get some Stuff Scott Sees music?
All right. Here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
This is the weekend of, remember when, NASCAR was in town, Dragon Con was here, there was a bunch of football games, something else was happening, I don't remember.
Labor Day,
huge weekend here in town, right? Yeah. Also happened to be the same weekend that I was going to look at that Bugatti.
Right,
okay?
Yeah.
So I had a camera in my car. As I'm ready to pull onto the highway, onto Georgia 400, guess what I see in traffic? Just take a wild guess.
Three-wheeled vehicle?
Nope. Lots of fiberglass. Tons of fiberglass. Highly visible.
the Oscar Mayer wiener dog card?
How would you ever guess that?
Am I right?
I'm throwing up my hands. How did you ever guess that?
Oh, I've got the shiny.
I saw the Oscar Mayer wiener mobile in traffic on the road.
It was fiberglass, I think.
It's huge. It was a gigantic vehicle. I've seen this is the second time in my whole life I've ever seen it on the road. I've seen them in museums.
Yeah.
At the Henry Ford, they've even got, you know, it's right parked outside of a hot dog stand that, you know, you can buy stuff at. But yeah, I was thinking, I know that this isn't the first Wienermobile that, you know, has ever existed. There's a whole bunch of them. There's an entire evolution of Oscar Mayer Wienermobiles. I think maybe we should talk about
them. We should do that.
So maybe that's a reasonable topic for future kind of fun podcast.
Yeah. Hey, listeners, if you guys think that is a good or bad idea, write in and let us know. Because if we get enough people to write in and tell us not to do it, then we might skip it.
True, but I think there's enough variation in these things
and
history in them that, you know, it's a great marketing tool.
It is.
I saw it once in Detroit, and I've seen it once now here.
It's a cool job, too.
I took two photos of it because I had the camera with me in the car for the first time ever for this kit car, and I just snapped a couple photos.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. All right, back to listener mail. All right, let's do a couple real quick here, and there's one that I want to be sure to get to.
Okay.
This guy's written in a few times, and got a name correction to go over. All right. Let's talk about Neil. Neil is from Overland Park, Kansas. And Neil has an excellent suggestion for a future podcast
as
well. He says that he just wants to know about some of the basic parts of cars, like the alternator, the timing belt, the radiator.
I remember this.
Defroster. Yeah. The most basic systems in the car, so like a back to basics type podcast. I know we've talked about basic systems before, but
yeah.
So this is a little better. This is like maybe the cooling system or the timing system or the valve system or, you know, all that.
What does it mean when I need my transmission fluid flush?
Exactly. Yeah. Stuff like that. Like that. So that's a great, you know, thing to talk about. Thanks, Neil.
Thanks, Neil.
Let me leaf through my notes here to the very end, but there's one here that, I wanted to make sure I read. This guy's from Missouri. Okay.
Okay.
And I'm going to spell his name. Okay.
All right.
It's B-U-T-C-H-E.
B-U-T-C-H-E.
Okay. We've read his letter in the past before, not this one.
Uh-oh.
I called him Butch.
Okay.
Which seems reasonable, right? But there was that E at the end. Apparently his name, he spelled it out phonetically for us, and he wasn't mad.
Okay.
Butche.
Okay. Butche. Thank you, Butche.
Yeah. But he says a lot of cats call him Butch, so it's, you know, whatever works for us is fine.
No, we'll do it correctly.
Butche. I like Boot. Che.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Anyways, Butche, he's written us several times and writes long letters, and it's really good stuff. He runs a screen printing shop, by the way. I took a look at his website, and pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool stuff. And you know what? Can I mention it?
Yeah, of course.
All right. His name, his site is oddduckdesigns.com. So check that out.
Kind Shout of cool out. Stuff. Oddduckdesigns.com. They didn't pay us. We just like it.
No. I just figured I'd mention it because this guy writes us all the time, and he's got some really good ideas. Long letter here, which I like. I think he's probably working late one night listening to us or something, but I've got two things here from him. One was, and I'm going to read the most recent first, but he had a 54 Buick Roadmaster with a 322 nailhead engine, and he writes, "Hats on hearts, boys, it's a nailhead." And he sold it to some kid, God rest her soul. So he says he sold her for a 68 Impala, and he still misses the Buick, okay?
Okay.
But in owning the Buick, you know, which he dearly misses, he said that he was thinking about Harley Earl and Ned Nichols, who were designers on the Buick, of course. You know, Harley Earl was the first VP of design for GM. Had a lot to do with the Corvette design, Buick Y-Job, which was the first ever concept car. They weren't ever done before that. He had to do with tail fins. So some, you know, remarkable leaps forward in automobile design from Harley Earl. And Ned Nichols, of course, he was with GM Buick division as well. And his thing was the, you know, the portholes that you've seen on the side of old Buicks?
Yes.
On the front fender?
Yeah.
Those are his idea. From the old Buicks, and I'm sure there's a lot more than just that, of course. But anyways, he said that you know, wouldn't it be kind of cool to do a like a hero podcast? Because to him, these guys are his heroes because they worked on the car that he loved so much.
Mm-hmm.
So what about a hero podcast or two?
I like that,
and I like that as well.
That's a great idea. Automotive heroes.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about Tucker. We've talked about I think we've talked about Harley Earl in the past. We've talked about Bill Mitchell. You know, with Corvette.
Yep.
The Stingray production. So I think that's a good one. And this other one, this is from a much older email from Boucher. And another great idea. This is with many, many others. Just to give you an example in this idea, he mentioned the hit and miss engines. He was talking about a Dixie Shovelhead motorcycle. He's going to be riding in something called the Stampede, which is a coast-to-coast motorcycle race. It's a very demanding race, I guess. He says there's no rubber mounts on the seat. It's just real, just a hard mount, I guess, on the seat. He says a few people start and even fewer finish in this race. I don't know how that turned out. He's also working on a salt flat racer for the Bonneville Salt Flats.
Wow.
So this guy's busy. He's got, you know, in addition to the screen printing he's got going on. Definitely a gearhead. I like this. He mentions that his dad had an Austin Healey in the 1970s, and he, you know, of course, loved it. It was the first car that Boucher ever waxed. So, you know, he has this connection with this car.
Definitely.
You know, his dad's car, right?
Yeah.
And in the mid-90s, he found it again, his dad's car, and they wanted about $5,000 more than he wanted to pay for it and couldn't buy it. So kind of a heartbreak there. But his idea was that maybe we could talk about finding what he calls daddy's car. And I think this is a great idea because a lot of people have this this emotional relationship, I guess, with the car that they remember sitting in the back seat and listening to the radio in with their dad or mom or whoever. We'll call it dad's car just because that's typically what happens. But it might be mom's car. It might be grandpa's car. It
might be your older brother's car.
Could be your first car. Could be your finding your first car. How would you ever do that? You know, dig it back up again. I don't know. There's some interesting stuff there. So thank you, Boucher from Missouri. I appreciate the idea.
And thanks for not getting as mad at us about the name thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's probably the best part.
Yeah, right.
No, so we're definitely going to look into that one because I like that an awful lot.
Let me, do we got any more? Do you want me to,
Ben, I've got stacks. So,
yeah,
we're gonna have to call it quits at some point here.
Okay. You want to do one more thing? You got the one more thing look.
Okay. I'm looking at all my notes here. I got a couple questions for you, but I think we can just hang on to them until next time.
Well, let's do a roll call and say thank you so much to Luke, Eric, Turi, Peter, Alan, CJ, Matt, Denny, Tony, Boucher, Neil, Scott, Benjamin, and,
Ben Bowen.
Oh, well, thanks, man. I'm just kind of hanging, but, I think we've got some great ideas here. And some of the listeners might be wondering, hey guys, why are you telling us in advance what you're going to do for your podcast? Well, think of it as sort of a spoiler, a trapdoor, an invitation to, write into us before we go on the air. So if you want to talk to us about driver's ed or muscle cars, moving buildings, the Oscar Mayer hot dog, the Stampede, Heroes of Automotives, you know, the list goes on.
Just anything. If you can think of something that relates to this and you want to talk to us about it, or just make your point known, you know, that, hey, by the way, I'm riding in this race, like Boucher said, that he's going to ride in the Stampede, and that had a lot to do with, you know, that cross-country race we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
Well, the Route 66 race, I think, is what I was talking about. I think it's definitely worthwhile for people to know the topics ahead of time and maybe come at us with some good info we can include during that podcast.
Yeah, because we're hanging out all the time on the internet, basically. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at Car Stuff. You can find us on the blog, on our website. You can find us on our website, of course. We've got a nifty podcast page up now.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. I like that a lot.
And so if you would like to write to us with something to say about these ideas we've gone over today.
Or Nuts and Bolts Part 4. There's a chance. I've got a stack here still, but, write in. Who knows? Maybe it'll turn up on the next one.
You'll never know unless you send us an email at
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.